everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. For those of you who know me and who've been following along for the past 6 years, one of the biggest and still the biggest guests who's ever been on my show is master storyteller, the master of the police procedural and legal thrillers, John Lesquois. John is with me today. We are going to talk about his new book called Poison. It is a Dismiss Hardy book. He is known for his unique character, Dismiss. Without any further ado, I want to welcome my friend John Lesquois. John, thank you so much for being here with me on Authors on the Air.
It's my pleasure, Pam. Good to be here.
How are you? What's new and exciting in your world?
I'm doing great. I got a new book out. I got a new grandchild. You know, my first grandchild is fantastic. And Poison just came out 2 weeks ago, and sales are up from last year quite significantly. And so all looks really good. My life is about as good as it can be right now.
I think that's terrific. I love this book, but, you know, I'm a huge fan of yours anyway. And I love this quote from Booklist about the new one. It says, "The narrative flows effortlessly and includes a Perry Mason-worthy moment when Hardy manifests a bit of courtroom magic. Lesquois is the perfect choice for readers who enjoy great ensemble casts." You know,
God,
that's really true. That's
a nice
really
thing
special.
To hear. I hadn't even heard that one.
That's a really great thing to hear. Poison is an amazing book. And I love this book because the storyline is one I don't ever read. And, of course, always with your books, I'm always impressed with that. But the fact of the matter is, this one's pretty exciting to me because, you know, you've got some really interesting characters here. So why don't I let you tell everyone about this book? Because I love it.
Well, good. You know, this book has a couple of things going on, and all of them, I think one of the reasons it works to the degree that it does is that it's very personal in the ways that, you know, others of my books may not have been. This book starts out with Dismiss Hardy talking to his son, Vincent, at a baseball game. Well, I love baseball, number one. And number two, Vincent, the whole time they're at the game, Vincent's sitting on with his you know, his cell phone's out and his iPad is in his lap. And, you know, it's very much a kind of a look at how the generations have changed over the last, you know, 10 years. And I think a lot of us older guys who would identify with Dismiss can also identify with how he feels about his son being on the phone every minute of the day. His son works for Facebook. And in my case, the reason I kind of did this is I had written an earlier Dismiss Hardy book about Rebecca. And, you know, my daughter Justine thought that was about her. So I figured I owed my son Jack the opportunity to be a character.
I love that.
Be a character in one of my books. And at the same time, when I got that thing kind of going, that subplot going, it kind of led me to explore the idea of having a big family involved in a business. And I come from a family of seven. So six brothers and sisters and, you know, my mom and dad. Even though we weren't in any kind of business together, I had never really talked about the whole dynamic of families of that size. And so I just thought it would be really fun to have, like, a big family and all of the internal workings of that family, which I was very familiar with. So that's what kind of started the book going. The other thing that just kind of happened right at the beginning of the book is I thought, you know, I've written that now. This is my 28th book.
28th, right.
Yeah, it's nuts. But anyway, you know, I didn't want to repeat the same kind of murder scenarios that I had done in the past. And I had never done anything with poison. And I said, this is a kind of a cool way to get into a story. And it leads me to some interesting plot dynamics. And this happens because the other part of the story concerns people who are shot and apparently have nothing to do with the poison part of the book. So anyway, there's a lot of really cool things that finally turn this into as Booklist seems to think, a pretty compelling mystery. And it's, I think, one of the best mysteries that I've ever written in terms of who did it and why they did it and all of that stuff. It's pretty fun.
Well, you know, what is the old expression? When there's a crime, you follow the money. And
yeah.
Boy, this one is so on point. This book is so on point with it because, and I like the fact that it's about heirs and you know, wills and, you know, whodunit. And it's just a really fun.
Yeah.
It's a fun read. It's a fun read when you don't have to think too hard about enjoying yourself. It just flows so naturally, John. And
so, you know, yeah, one of the things
ahead.
That I really enjoyed on, you know, because I'm on my book tour as well this week and last week, and one of the things I've really been doing, it's funny you should mention that it's so fun to read, is I have been reading parts of this aloud at my signings. And most of the time I have not done that before, but there are just a couple of scenes in this book that just crack me up and that are really fun to just read aloud. And, you know, they've been very well received by audiences, you know, live audiences. So I think it's kind of fun. I don't know how it got so fun because it was all serious when I started, and it's a very serious crime and bad stuff happens. But you're right. I mean, I had so much fun writing some of these scenes that I just don't even know where they came from, but I'm really glad they're there.
You know, I try to go to as many book signings as I can, and I love it when the author reads because I hear the story told in a different way than I'm reading it. And
yeah.
And it's nice to hear the wordsmith actually reading the words out loud. Because even the tone, the inflection, the emphasis is really a little bit different than the way I read. And so that's a lot of fun. And I would imagine your audiences are really loving that part of it, too.
It's just been so much fun. I love that you brought up the word fun because that,
yes.
You know, I mean, we forget sometimes that the whole point of reading, you know, the experience is just fun. It's a fun
to be
thing.
Entertained. Yes.
That's
yes.
Right. And, you know, it's good that we can have these other, you know, things going on in terms of, like, serious plot points and serious thematic elements. But, you know, it's not all about that. It's all about the experience of reading and how much fun you can have. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I'm so glad you hit on that. And I'm also glad that we mentioned earlier you're on your 28th book. John, do you remember when you first started writing your first book that was published?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I wrote my first book that got published when I was 22 years old, but I didn't even submit it to a publisher until I was 36. It sat in my drawer.
Really?
And really, I didn't have the guts to put it out. I didn't even try. I just said, no, you know, it's not. I'm not really there yet. And then it was really funny. I was working as a technical writer in Washington, D.C., and I was just not enjoying it at all. And I said, what am I going to do? I'd already published one book, but it wasn't the first book I'd written. So, you know, I had several other manuscripts in my drawers, and that was a paperback book that had gotten published. And suddenly I said, you know what? I got to do something bigger. I got to have something happen. And I took out that 14-year-old manuscript and looked at it and said, you know, this one ought to work. And that became Son of Holmes, and that became my first hardcover book and started
wow.
this run of books. It's amazing.
How do you, when you look back at that very first book, and I don't know if you took it out and you edited anything or not. How has your
really?
Writing changed over the 28 books now?
Well, the main thing that happened is I went from first person, which my first three books were first person books. And I went to third person, and that made a huge change in my mindset and my approach to how I wrote. And then it allowed me to become much more conversational. So I think that's a big, big part of the way I feel about writing now is I feel like in the way I teach my students when I'm having classes about the craft,
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
I say, I think what you want to do as a narrator is you want to just take a reader by the hand and walk them into a book. As though they're your friend and they're seeing everything from the direction that you're looking, And I think that's really one of the keys. It just makes it feel like, you know, that you're colloquial, you use kind of normal language, and you make it so it flows easily. And that seems to be the key.
When I read your books, I have a very distinct voice of each character. There is, it's so clear to me who your characters are by how they speak, the manner
how they speak.
Yes,
dialogue
like you
is your friend.
Yes, and
I mean that's what really does betray. I mean, it shows you what a person is by the way they talk and the way they react, and when you have people interacting and talking to one another. It's just fantastically easy to me, anyway, to differentiate between the two voices or even three voices. And it allows you to be funny and allows you to be sarcastic. It allows you to be serious. I mean, dialogue is your friend.
It is interesting for you to say that because you write such distinctive voices. There are times, and you know me, John, you know I'm a voracious reader. I always have been. I get a book and I'll start reading it and there will be a back and forth dialogue and I just don't know who's talking. I don't know whose voice is coming at me because the it is so similar. And I want my characters to be distinctive. I don't want you to have to say, this is Dismas talking, this is Grant Wagner talking, this is Abby talking. You know, I want to know just by the dialogue, which is something that you have masterfully done every single book, bar none. And
it's something I really work very hard at to try to make that, you know, dialogue really distinctive for each individual.
Do you ever read your dialogue out loud? Do you listen to what it sounds like?
I absolutely read it all out loud. When I'm writing and I finish a bunch of dialogue, I sit back. The first thing I do is I go back over it, and I watch for clinkers, and I watch for if, you know, suddenly somebody doesn't sound like him or herself. I go back and fix it right away. And
Yeah, the background doesn't matter. I mean, you can be describing a house. Who cares what that voice of description is, the narrator's voice? But you want your characters to be different, right?
Exactly.
So, which begs the question, do you ever listen to your books in Audible?
This is a terrible thing to admit. I have never heard one of them.
Well, I'm not surprised. A lot of writers tell me that. I'm just curious if the narrator of your books, your audiobooks, gets it right. And is that why
you
don't?
Well, you know what?
I get a lot of
emails from people who like them, who write me and say, "I listened to your book on audio and I loved it." And you know, here and I know, but they're writing to me because they love the book. So, you know, I'm glad that they like it, but I know that I have a voice in my head that I hear, and that's my narrative voice. And
I
think if I listened to somebody else reading my stuff, it'd get a little bit funny. I don't know. I haven't been tempted to do it just for that reason.
Do you listen to any books in audio version?
No.
Yeah, I don't either. I can't stay in the book when I'm listening to audio. My mind wanders. It becomes ambient noise to me. And I know it drives... It drives some people crazy when I tell them that, and I don't mean to be insulting, but I'm grounded in the book visually. Is that how you are?
Yeah. Well, I am, really. And the other thing is I don't have a long commute to work anymore. And so I just work about 4 miles from my house, and there's no opportunity for me to just sit down, you know, plug in something and just let the story wash over me while I'm driving or something. So, for me to have the time to do the audio thing on top of everything else.
Yes, I understand.
But, you know, you're
that.
Always working on the next book. I mean, you're working on the editing of the next book and the outline for the book after that and the promotion of the book you're currently doing. You know, there's really, it's a kind of a treadmill. And one of the things that just doesn't have a spot on that treadmill is the audio side, for me, anyway.
Do you have a chance to read for your own enjoyment?
Oh yeah, yeah. I am currently reading. I'm going through a C.J. Box phase. I don't know if you know C.J.
Oh yeah, he's coming on next month.
I love the guy.
I know. His new book is great. Disappeared, right?
Oh, I just read it like last week, and then I'm reading.
It's
I'm
great.
Going back and reading books 2 and 3 in the early part of the series. Right now, I'm in the middle of Winter Kill, and it's just fantastic.
His Joe Pickett is great, but
he's great.
I like some of his standalones are not too shabby either. Although I have
to admit,
I've got a fondness for Joe Pickett. I really do.
Well, you know the whole great thing about when you have these characters that catch on, like I've got my Dismas and he's got Joe. You know, it's really interesting how it works in the marketplace because everybody, for example, liked my book Fatal last year. I got great reviews and everything was nice. But it was a standalone book, and everybody said, yeah, Fatal's good, but when's Dismas coming back?
Right.
And that's pretty much what everybody feels, and that's so I feel like let's deliver that next time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I was very fond of Rebecca Hardy, so I totally understand that, you know.
You know what? I just pulled down her book to give to an auction today, that book, The Fall.
Uh-huh.
And I read, it says the first Rebecca Hardy novel on the front, and I go, I don't even know if there's going to be another one. I got Hardy, I got Glitzky, I got Wyatt Hunt, I've got Gina Roque, I've got all these people who've got, who've got series of their own, and it's like, how am I going to put Rebecca Hardy in, another book with her? So
I
don't know the answer to
that. Well, it's her first case, so
yes.
That's okay. I have to admit a fondness for the Hunt books, too. I like those books very, very much. Is he on your radar at all?
Well, he's in the next book quite a bit. So, the next book after Poison, which, by the way, I've already handed in. So that's...
Oh, wonderful.
Everybody's still going to be out playing the game next time around, so...
I love it. Oh, this is going to be great. So... John, when you first started writing, did you really enjoy the process of sitting down and writing and creating your characters and the storyline and all?
Yes. I just loved it.
Do you still?
It's different because I have been very fortunate to be under contract for all of these years now. I mean, I'm, almost 30 books into this career. And a lot of it is the business now. I mean, the business of it and, promoting and doing things that are not really the writing. Never in my wildest dreams when I first started out did I think that there would be a whole business part of this. You know, just making a living to me was very difficult to get started on. But since then, I get involved in the actual writing of the book. Once I'm putting down pages, I'm a happy man. But it's finding the time to put down those pages that makes for some stress from time to time.
Yeah, I know from our previous conversations that you are a very disciplined writer. You go to your office and write. And you are not one of these people who prefers to sit in a noisy Starbucks or something like that.
No.
I know that there are people who really enjoy that cacophony. And I always think, boy, if I was this cafe owner and somebody came and plopped their butt in my booth, and I'd be pretty ticked off about that, But you've always been the kind of guy who went and you went to work because writing books is still a business.
Well, it's also, as you say, it's work. It's a craft. You have to go in there and put down the pages every day, and they don't get put down if you don't write them. So the only way I can make that happen is come into work every day, sit down, turn on my computer, and go, well, what's next? And that's really how I look at it.
Well, so I know that you write until you're finished writing. So my question to you is, you've spent today writing. I know you're in your office now, and I know it's 1 o'clock where you are. And I know that you're going to be writing again. When tomorrow rolls around, are you still in the moment of that book, or do you have to go back and read a little bit to get back in that moment?
Oh, no. I have to go back and read a little bit and, procrastinate as much as I possibly can. As I go in there, I go in and when I start writing, it's every day there's that blank page and, you just sit there and stare at the page until blood comes out of your forehead. I mean, really, somehow that's how it feels. There's, of course, days that you come in and you know what you're going to be doing and you just sit down and you wrap it out. But most days, if you're trying to really write state-of-the-art stuff and make it be good, you know, and really creative and not what everybody else is doing. You know, it takes quite a bit of intensity. And when you're getting that, when I get that intense, I can't say it's fun. I'm just in a different zone completely.
Right, right, right.
It's like I'm almost not aware of myself. So I've gone sometimes 2 or 3 hours where I'll all of a sudden look up and go, oh my goodness, it's 5 o'clock. You know, I'm done.
Wow, wow.
And I'm not even aware of it, you know.
When you stop writing for the day,
yeah,
does the book stay with you? Do you take the book home?
No. No, I'm very, very disciplined about that. I don't even want it to be in my brain, because otherwise all I'd be doing is talking about writing. And that's just not it. Yeah, it's my job, but it's not my life. So.
Well, let's talk about some other parts of your life, because you are also a very fine musician. And I love talking to you about that, because you've recorded stuff and you've had a really good time with it. And I can't remember the name of your band, but you'll tell me what it is.
Johnny Capo and his real good band.
There he is, Johnny Capo. I couldn't quite remember that.
That's
Are you still playing?
Yeah, are you still there, Pam?
Yeah,
Pam?
I'm here.
Oh, good.
Yes, I'm here.
Good.
I'm here.
Yeah, I'm still playing. I have, in fact, I'm building a guitar right now. I've been building it for about 1.5 years. It's taking a lot longer than I thought, but it's beautiful, and I think it's going to sound great. And back, you know, until I was 30 years old, I was a full-time musician, singer, songwriter, you know, band man, doing all of that. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's another part of my life that's always been there, and I don't think it's going away.
Well, you're just a creative guy anyway, so it stands to reason. Do you have any other creative pursuits that we should know about? I mean, are you a photographer?
No.
I know that you cook, though. You like to cook.
I cook. I'm a pretty good cook, and I'd have to say that's where a lot of my creativity comes into play. I like making up dishes. I like going off the menu and seeing what I can come up with, so I'd say that's a big part of my life as well.
But you like a lot of Latin dishes, whether it's Italian or Spanish, don't you?
Yeah, I like Latin. I like Mediterranean. I like Chinese. I'm a full service cook. So
there you go.
That's what are you going to do? You know, so you got to eat every day. You might as well make it good.
Make it good. Well, I'm going to try your paella recipe, because being from Miami, John, you know I've had some really good paella, and
I bet you have,
I'm looking at your recipe and I'm thinking, oh my goodness gracious, does that look good? Now, one of the things we do in Miami that's a little bit different is rather than using the chicken wings. They will use chicken, but we also use a lot of stone crab and maybe some lobster. So do I. Now, you've been to Miami, so you know Joe Stone Crab, right?
Yes.
Okay. My favorite place to go of all time, and every time I go back to Miami, I force my brother to take me there to eat, because there is nothing like a good stone crab. But we use stone crab in our paella, by the way, so I just thought I'd share that with you.
Okay, well, now I'm jealous, although we have Dungeness out here, which is pretty good as well.
Yes.
So,
nothing like
a
stone crab, though. So
You're right.
So what's next for you? You've turned in the next book. Do you have a working title that you can share, or is it a secret?
Yeah, I really love it, but we have to go with under the caveat that it's, you know, it probably is going to get changed just because they usually do. But this
one
I handed in under a title I very much like, and I hope we get to keep it. It's called Lawyers at War.
Wow, I like that.
Yeah, I do.
I like that. But aren't lawyers always at war anyway?
Well,
I mean, you're
a little
on one
bit,
side
but
of...
this is a little bit outside the box of war. I mean, they're really going at it, these couple of these gangs. Yeah. It's a very interesting book. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about
Maybe
it.
You can call
my
publisher and tell them that, you know, you like it and they should keep it.
I will call them. I will call your publicist anyway. Tell us a little bit about the story, if you would, without giving away too much, because I really want people to read Poison first, But I'm a huge fan, as you well know, and I will be I will be getting the galley for it when it's ready.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about Lawyers at War.
Well, it starts out where Hardy's long-suffering secretary, a woman named Phyllis. I mean, if you've read the books, you know
yes.
that Phyllis is
yes.
kind of she's a pained kind of a bland person who's the butt of many jokes in these books.
Yes.
Well, it turns out that Phyllis has got another side to her that is actually wonderful. She's actually part of the Underground Railroad getting rid of it. It's a very contemporary story. It's about DACA kids from El Salvador and Mexico
wow.
who are going to be deported, and she is helping them get away to Canada. Phyllis is. And
wow.
one of these women becomes a suspect in a murder as well as a DACA person. So
wow.
there's all kinds of modern things that are going on just today in the Supreme Court. You know, this is
yes, I heard that today.
Be,
yes,
yeah, it couldn't be more relevant
timely.
And more immediate than it is.
Absolutely,
and
my sister-in-law
so
works a lot with DACA
that.
Kids.
Yeah. And anyway, this is a big deal, and you know, it's I wrote this you know about a year ago because I saw this coming. And so
right.
there's a lot of political overtones, a lot of I just think fascinating morality going on, and that's Hardy finds himself in the middle of this war with a bad district attorney playing
wow.
by the rules. It's a pretty strong book. So
I can't wait to read it. John,
yeah.
tell everyone where they can find you on your tour. Do you have your dates in front of you, or shall I pull up your
Well,
your event.
You know, now we're getting, it's 2 weeks after the book, so we're getting to the end. The things that I'm doing in the next month, I'm at the Poison Pen in Scottsdale. I'm at Murder by the Book in Houston. I'm at Capitol Public Radio here in Sacramento. I'm in Des Moines Public Library, two or three other library gigs. I think probably you should just
go to my...
Lincoln Public Library.
Right.
Right.
So
recommend that people go to my webpage, which is just my name, www.johnlesquad.com, no spaces.
And we should explain that if you try to find John phonetically, you won't. and we
You're
laugh
right.
about this every single time you
it
were
never
on
gets
the show.
Better.
No, nobody gets it that John did not spell his name like this just to screw with you. This is the name he was born with, and
yes.
it is pronounced Lesquois, but it is spelled Lescroart. There is no way he would keep that name if he
yeah.
had a choice, right?
Exactly. If I had it to do over again, I would be John somebody else.
There you go.
Yeah.
John Lesquois, you know I adore you, and I'm so glad that you came on the show today. Thank you so very much, and I know this is going to be a huge success, but I wish you all the best, and keep enjoying those readings, because I will tell you as a fan, as a reader, that's the most fun you can have at a book signing.
Cool. Great.
And I'll see you in July at Thriller Fest.
That sounds great. We'll see you then.
Thank you. Thank you so much, John. And have a terrific
you,
afternoon. You're
you
welcome.
Too.
Bye-bye. Bye. And I'll be back later on at 7 o'clock to speak to my friend Carolyn Brown, who writes the most exceptional women's fiction and romance. Thanks for being with me, and I'll talk to you in a little while. See ya.